shame. Perhaps something deeper cracked through him. Kaol made himself brace a hand on the man's shoulder, the same shoulder that housed the metal arm. Found the strength beneath to be unwavering as Shen assisted him into the awaiting chair. And when Kaol was seated in it, staring at the guard as the stable hands led his horse away, Shen explained.
I lost it 1.5 years ago. There was an attack on Prince Argon's life when he visited a vizier's estate, a rogue band from a disgruntled kingdom. I lost it during the fight. Irene worked on me when I returned. I was one of her first considerable healings. She managed to repair as much as she could from here upward.
He pointed to right below his elbow, then up his shoulder. Kaol studied the hand that was so lifelike within the glove he could not notice the difference, save for the fact that it did not move at all.
Healers can do many wonders, Shen said.
But growing limbs from thin air.
A soft laugh. That is beyond their skill. Even one such as Irene.
Kaol didn't know what to say. Apologies felt wrong, but... Shen smiled down at him, with no trace of pity.
It has taken me a long time to get to this place, he said a bit quietly.
Kaol knew he didn't mean the skilled use of his artificial arm. Shen added,
But know that I did not get here alone.
The unspoken offer shone in the guard's brown eyes. Unbroken, this man before him. No less of a man for his injury, for finding a new way to move through the world.
And Shen had stayed on as a guard,
as one of the most elite palace guards in the world. Not from any pity of the others, but through his own merit and will. Kaol still couldn't find the right words to convey what coursed through him. Shen nodded as if he understood that, too.
It was a long trip back to his suite.
Kaol didn't mark the faces he passed, the sounds and smells and streams of wind wending through the halls. He returned to the rooms to find his note to Nezrin sitting on the foyer table, unread. It was enough to chase any other thoughts from his mind. Heart thundering, his fingers shook as he picked up his unread, unseen letter. But then he spotted the letter beneath it, his name written in her handwriting. He ripped it open, reading the few lines. He read it twice. Thrice. He set it down on the table and stared at her open bedroom door, the silence leaking from it.
He was a bastard. He'd dragged her here, had nearly gotten her killed in Rifthold so many times, had implied so much about the two of them, and yet, he didn't let himself finish the thought. He should have been better, treated her better. No wonder she'd flown off to the Rook Ares to help Sartak find any sort of information on the Volg history in this land, or their own. Shit. Shit. She might not hold him to any promises, but he held himself to them. And he had let this thing between them go on, had used her like some crutch. Kaol blew out a breath, crumpling Nezrin's letter and his own in his fist.
Perhaps he had not slept well in that tiny room at the physician's compound, accustomed to far larger and finer accommodations, Irene told herself that afternoon. It would explain his few words, the lack of smiling. She'd had one on her face when she'd entered Kaol's suite after lunch. She'd explained her progress to Hafiza, who had been very pleased indeed, even giving Irene a kiss on her brow before she left, practically skipping here, until she entered and found it quiet, found him quiet.
Are you feeling well?
Irene asked casually, as she hid the books he'd brought back with him that morning.
Yes.
She leaned against the desk to study where Kaol sat on the gold couch.
You have not exercised in a few days.
She angled her head. The rest of your body, I mean. We should do it now. For people accustomed to physical activity every day, going without for so long could feel like ripping an addict off a drug. Disoriented. Restless.
He'd kept up the exercises for his legs, but the rest, perhaps it was what clawed at him.
All right.
His eyes were glazed, distant. Here, or one of the guards' training facilities.
She braced herself for the shutdown.
But Kayal just said flatly,
"Here is fine."
She tried again. "Perhaps being around the other guards will be beneficial to..."
"Here is fine."
Then he moved himself onto the floor, sliding his body away from the couch and low-lying table, and to the open carpet.
"I need you to brace my feet."
Irene checked her irritation at the tone, the outright refusal. But she still said as she knelt before him, "Have we really gone back to that place?"
He ignored her question, and launched into a series of upward curls, his powerful body surging up, then down. 1, 2, 3. She lost count around 60. He didn't meet her stare each time he rose up over his bent knees. It was natural for the emotional healing to be as difficult as the physical, for there to be hard days, hard weeks, even.
But he'd been smiling when she left him last night, and...
"Tell me what happened. Something happened today." Her tone was perhaps not quite as gentle as a healer's ought to be.
"Nothing happened."
The words were a push of air as he kept moving, sweat sliding down the column of his neck and into the white shirt beneath. Irene clenched her jaw, counting quietly in her head. Snapping would do neither of them any good. Kayal eventually turned onto his stomach and began another set that required her to hold his feet in a position that would keep him slightly aloft. Up and down, down and up. The sleek muscles of his back and arms bunched and rippled. He went through 6 other exercises, then started the entire set again. Irene supported and held and watched in simmering silence.
Let him have his space. Let him think through it if that's what he wants.
Damn what he wants.
Kayal finished a set, his breathing ragged, chest heaving as he stared up at the ceiling. Something sharp and driving flickered across his face, as if in silent answer to something.
He lurched upward to begin the next set.
"That's enough." His eyes flashed, meeting hers at last. Irene didn't bother looking pleasant or understanding.
"You'll do yourself an injury."
He glared toward where she had stabilized his bent knees and curled upward again.
"I know my limits."
"And so do I,"
she snapped, jerking her chin toward his legs.
"You might hurt your back if you keep this up."
He bared his teeth, the temper vicious enough that she let go of his feet. His arms shot out to brace him as he slid backward, but she lunged, grabbing for his shoulders to keep him from slamming to the ground. His sweat-drenched shirt soaked into her fingers, his breathing rasping in her ear as she confirmed he wasn't about to fall.
"I've got it," he growled in her ear.
"Forgive me if I don't take your word for it,"
she snipped, assessing for herself that he indeed could support himself, before she withdrew and settled herself a few feet away on the carpet. In silence, they glared at each other.
"Exercising your body is vital," Irene said, her words clipped. "But you will do more harm than good if you push yourself too hard."
"I'm fine."
"You think I don't know what you're doing?"
Kayal's face was a hard mask, sweat sliding down his temple.
"This was your sanctuary,"
she said, gesturing to his honed body, the sweat on him.
"When things got hard, when they went wrong, when you were upset or angry or sad, you would lose yourself in the training.
In sweating until it burned your eyes, in practicing until your muscles were shaking and begging you to stop. And now you can't. Not as you once did." Ire boiled in his face at that.
She kept her own face cool and hard as she asked, "How does that make you feel?"
His nostrils flared.
"Don't think you can provoke me into talking."
"How does it feel, Lord Westfall?"
"You know how it feels, Irene."
"Tell me."
When he refused to answer, she hummed to herself.
Well, since you seem determined to get a complete exercise routine in, I might as well work your legs a bit.
His stare was a brand.
She wondered if he could sense the tightness that now clamped down on her chest,
the pit that opened in her stomach as he remained quiet. But Irene rose up on her knees and moved down his body, beginning the series of exercises designed to trigger pathways between his mind and spine. The ankle and foot rotations he could do on his own, though he certainly gritted his teeth after the 10th set. But Irene pushed him through it, ignored his bubbling anger, keeping a saccharine smile on her face while she coaxed his legs through the movements. It was only when she reached for his upper thighs that Kaol halted her with a hand on her arm. He met her stare, then looked away, jaw tight, as he said,
"I'm tired. It's late. Let's meet tomorrow morning."
"I don't mind starting now with the healing. Perhaps with the exercising, those wrecked pathways might be firing up more than usual."
"I want some rest."
It was a lie. Despite his exercising, he had good color in his face. His eyes were still bright with anger.
She weighed his expression, the request. "Resting doesn't seem at all like your style."
His lips tightened.
"Get out."
Irene snorted at the order.
"You may command men and servants, Lord Westfall, but I don't answer to you."
Still, she uncoiled to her feet, having had quite enough of his attitude. Bracing her hands on her hips, she stared at where he remained sprawled on the carpet.
"I'll have food sent in, things to help pack on the muscle."
"I know what to eat."
Of course he did. He'd been honing that magnificent body for years now. But she only brushed out the skirts of her dress.
"Yes, but I've actually studied the subject."
Kaol bristled, but said nothing, returning to staring at the swirls and flora woven into the carpet. Irene gave him another honey-sweet smile.
"I'll see you bright and early tomorrow, Lord—"
"Don't call me that."
She shrugged.
"I think I'll call you whatever I want."
His head snapped up, his face livid. She braced herself for the verbal attack, but he seemed to check himself, shoulders stiffening as he only said once more,
"Get out."
He pointed to the door with a long arm as he said so.
"I should kick that goddamned finger you're pointing,"
Irene snapped, striding to the door.
"But a broken hand would only keep you here longer."
Kaol again bared his teeth, ire pouring off him in waves now, that scar down his cheek stark against his flushed skin.
"Get out."
Irene just flashed another sickly sweet smile at him and shut the door behind her. She strode through the palace at a clip, fingers curling at her sides, reining in her roar. Patients had bad days. They were entitled to them. It was natural and a part of the process. But they had worked through so much of that. He had started to tell her things, and she'd told him things so few knew. And she'd enjoyed herself yesterday. She mulled over every word exchanged the night before. Perhaps he'd been angry at something Arisha had said on their ride here. The woman wasn't known for her bedside manner. Irene was honestly surprised the woman tolerated anyone, let alone felt inclined to help human beings. She could have upset him, insulted him. Or maybe he'd come to depend on Irene's constant presence, and the interruption of that routine had been disorienting. She'd heard of patients and their healers in such situations. But he'd shown no traits of dependency. No, the opposite went through him. A streak of independence and pride that hurt as much as it helped him. Breathing uneven, his behavior dragging claws down her temper, Irene sought out Hasar. The princess was just coming from swordplay lessons of her own. Renya was out shopping in the city, Hasar said, as she looped her sweat-damp arm through Irene's and led her toward her chambers.
"Everyone is busy, busy, busy today,"
Hasar groused, flicking her sweaty braid over a shoulder.
"Even Kashin is off with my father at some meeting about his troops." "Is there any reason why?"
a careful question. Hassar shrugged. He didn't tell me, though he probably felt inclined to do it, since Sartak showed us all up by flying off to his nest in the mountains for a few weeks.
He left?
And he took Captain Felik with him. A wry smile. I'm surprised you aren't consoling Lord Westfall.
Oh.
When did they leave? Yesterday afternoon. Apparently she said no word about it, didn't take her things, just left a note and vanished into the sunset with him. I didn't think Sartak had it in him to be such a charmer.
Irene didn't return the smile.
She'd bet good money that Kaol had returned this morning to find that note, to find Nezrin gone.
How did you learn she'd left a note?
Oh, the messenger told everyone. Didn't know what was inside it, but a note with Lord Westfall's name on it, left at the Aerie, along with one to her family in the city. The only trace of her. Irene made a mental mark to never send correspondence to the palace again. At least, not letters that mattered.
No wonder Kaol had been restless and angry, if Nezrin had vanished like that. Do you suspect foul play?
From Sartak? Hassar cackled. The question was answer enough. They reached the princess's doors, servants silently opening them and stepping aside. Little more than shadows made flesh. But Irene paused in the doorway, digging in her heels as Hassar tried to lead her in.
I forgot to get him his tea, she lied, disentangling her arm from Hassar's.
The princess only gave her a knowing smile. If you hear any interesting tidbits, you know where to find me. Irene managed a nod and turned on her heel. She didn't go to his rooms. She doubted Kaol's mood had improved in the 10 minutes she'd been storming through the palace halls. And if she saw him, she knew she wouldn't be able to refrain from asking about Nezrin, from pushing him until that control shattered. And she couldn't guess where that would leave them. Perhaps a place neither of them was ready for. But she had a gift, and a relentless driving thrum now roared in her blood thanks to him. She could not sit still, did not want to go back to the Torre to read or help any of the others with their work. Irene left the palace and headed down the dusty streets of Antica. She knew the way. The slums never moved, only grew or shrank depending on the ruler. In the bright sun, there was little to fear. They were not bad people, only poor, some desperate, many forgotten and disheartened. So she did as she had always done, even in Inish. Irene followed the sound of coughing. Chapter 27 Irene healed 6 people by the time the sun set. And only then did she leave the slums. One woman had a dangerous growth on her lungs that would have killed her. She'd been too busy with work to see a healer or physician. 3 children had been burning up with fever in a 2-cramped house, their mother weeping with panic. And then with gratitude, as Irene's magic soothed and settled and purified. One man had broken his leg the week before, and visited a piss-poor physician in the slums because he could not afford a carriage to carry him up to the Torre. And the 6th one. The girl was no more than 16. Irene had noticed her first because of the black eye, then the cut lip. Her magic had been wobbling, her knees with it. But Irene had led the girl into a doorway and healed her eye, the lip, the cracked ribs. Healed the enormous handprint-shaped bruises on her forearm. Irene asked no questions. She read every answer in the girl's fearful eyes anyway. Saw the girl consider whether it would land her with worse injuries to return home healed. So Irene had left the coloring, left the appearance of bruises but healed all beneath, leaving only the upper layer of skin, perhaps a little tender, to conceal the repaired damage. Irene did not try to tell her to leave. Whether it was her family or a lover or something else entirely, Irene knew that no one but the girl would decide whether to walk out that door. All she did was inform her that should she ever need it, the door to the Torre would always be open. No questions asked, no fee demanded. And they would make sure that no one was allowed to take her out again, unless she wished it. The girl had kissed Irene's knuckles in thanks, and scurried home in the falling dark. Irene herself had hurried, following the glimmering pillar of the Torre, her beacon home. Her stomach was grumbling, her head throbbing with fatigue and hunger. Drained. It felt good to be drained. To help. And yet, that hounding, restless energy still thrummed, still pushed. More, more, more. She knew why. What was left unsettled, still raging. So she changed course, spearing for the glowing mass of the palace. She paused at a favorite food stall, indulging in a meal of slow-roasted lamb that she devoured in a few minutes. It was rare that she got to eat beyond the confines of the palace at the Torre, thanks to her busy schedule. But when she did, Irene was rubbing her satisfied belly as she made her way up to the palace, but then spotted an open cave shop and managed to find room in her stomach for a cup of it, and a honey-dipped pastry. Dawdling. Restless and angry and stupid. Disgusted with herself, Irene stomped up to the palace at last. With the summer sun setting so late, it was well past 11 by the time she headed through the dark halls. Perhaps he'd be asleep. Maybe it would be a blessing. She didn't know why she'd bothered to come. Biting off his head could have waited until tomorrow. He was likely asleep. Hopefully asleep. It'd probably be better if his healer didn't barge into his room and shake him silly. It definitely wasn't behavior approved by the Torre, by Hafiza. And yet she kept walking, her pace increasing, steps near clomping on the marble floors. If he wanted to take a step back on their progress, that was just fine. But she certainly didn't have to let him do it, not without trying. Irene stormed down a long, dim corridor. She wasn't a coward. She wouldn't back down from this fight. She'd left that girl in that alley in Inish. And if he was inclined to sulk about Nezrin, then he was entitled to do so. But to call off their session because of it? Unacceptable. She'd simply tell him that and leave. Calmly. Rationally. Irene scowled with each step, muttering the word under her breath. Unacceptable. And she had let him kick her out, no matter what she might have tried to tell herself. That was even more unacceptable. Stupid fool. She muttered that, too. Loud enough that she nearly missed the sound. The footstep. The scrape of shoes on stone, just behind her. This late, servants were likely heading back to their master's rooms, but there it was, that sense pricking again. Only shadows and shafts of moonlight filled the pillar-lined hallway. Irene hurried her pace. She heard it again, the steps behind, a casual, stalking gait. Her mouth went dry, her heart thundering. She had no satchel, not even her little knife. Nothing in her pockets beyond that note. Hurry, a small, gentle voice murmured in her ear, in her head. She had never heard that voice before, but she sometimes felt its warmth, coursing through her as her magic flowed out. It was as familiar to her as her own voice, her own heartbeat. Hurry, girl! Urgency laced each word. Irene increased her pace, nearing a run. There was a corner ahead. She need only round it, make it 30 feet down that hall, and she'd be at his suite. Was there a lock on the door? Would it be locked against her, or be able to keep whoever it was out? Run, Irene! And that voice. It was her mother's voice that bellowed in her head. Her heart. She didn't stop to think, to wonder. Irene launched into a sprint. Her shoes slipped along the marble. And the person, the thing, behind her. Those footsteps broke into a run, too. Irene turned the corner and slid,
skidding into the opposite wall so hard her shoulder barked in pain. Feet scrambling, she fought to regain momentum, not daring to look back.
Faster!
Irene could see his door, could see the light leaking out from beneath it. A sob broke from her throat. Those rushing steps behind her closed in. She didn't dare risk her balance by looking. 20 feet. 10. 5. Irene hurled for the handle, gripping it with all her strength to keep from sliding past as she shoved against it. The door opened, and she whirled in, legs slipping beneath her as she slammed her entire body into the door and fumbled for the lock. There were two. She finished the first when the person on the other side barreled into the door. The entire thing shuddered. Her fingers shook, her breath escaping in sharp sobs as she fought for the second, heavier lock. She flipped it closed just as the door buckled again.
What in hell?
Get inside your room,
she breathed to Kaol, not daring to take her eyes off the door as it shuddered, as the handle rattled.
Get in, now.
Irene looked then to find him in the threshold of his bedroom, sword in his hand, eyes on the door.
Who the hell is that?
Get inside,
she said, her voice breaking.
Please.
He read the terror in her face. Read and understood. He shoved back into the room, holding the door for her and then sealing it behind her. The front door cracked. Kaol locked his bedroom door with a click. Only one lock.
The chest,
he said, his voice unfaltering.
Can you move it?
Irene whirled to the chest of drawers beside the door. She didn't reply as she threw herself against it, shoes again slipping on the polished marble. She kicked off her shoes, bare skin finding better grip on the stone as she heaved and grunted and shoved. The chest slid in front of the bedroom door.
The garden doors,
Kaol ordered, finishing locking them. They were solid glass. Dread and panic curled in her gut, ripping the breath from her throat.
Irene,
Kaol said evenly. Calmly. He held her gaze, steadying her.
How far is the nearest entrance to the garden from the outer hall?
A 2-minute walk,
she replied automatically. It was only accessible from the interior rooms, and as most of these were occupied, they'd have to take the hall to the very end, or risk running through the bedrooms next door, which...
Or one.
Make it count.
She scanned the bedroom for anything. There was an armoire beside the glass doors, towering high above.
Too high.
Too enormously heavy. But the movable screen to the bathroom... Irene hurtled across the room, Kaol lunging for a set of daggers on his nightstand. She grabbed the heavy wooden screen and hauled and shoved it, cursing as it snagged on the rug. But it moved. It got there. She flung open the armoire doors and wedged the screen between it and the wall, shaking it a few times for good measure. It held. She rushed to the desk, throwing books and vases off it. They shattered across the floor.
Stay calm. Stay focused.
Irene hauled the desk to the wood screen and flipped it onto its side with a clattering crash. She shoved it against the barricade she'd made.
But the window?
There was one across the room, high and small, but...
Leave it,
Kaol ordered, sliding into place in front of the glass doors. Sword angled and dagger in his other hand.
If they try that route... The small size will force them to be slow.
Long enough for him to kill it, whoever it was.
Get over here,
he said quietly. She did so, eyes darting between the bedroom door and the garden doors.
Deep breaths,
he told her.
Center yourself. Fear will get you killed as easily as a weapon.
Irene obeyed.
Take the dagger on the bed.
Irene balked at the weapon.
Do it.
She grabbed the dagger, the metal cool and heavy in her hand. Unwieldy. His breathing was steady, his focus unrelenting as he monitored both doors. The window.
The bathroom,
she whispered,
The windows are too high and narrow.
What if it's not in a human body?
The words ripped from her in a hoarse whisper. The illustrations she'd seen in that book. Then I'll keep it occupied while you run.
With the furniture in front of the exits.
His words sank in.
You will do no such...
The bedroom door shuddered beneath a blow. Then another. The handle shook and shook.
Oh, gods.
They hadn't bothered with the garden. They'd simply gotten in the front doors. Another bang that had her flinching away. Another.
Steady,
Kaol murmured. Irene's dagger trembled as he angled himself to the bedroom door, his blades unwavering. Another bang, furious and raging. Then, a voice. Soft and hissing. Neither male nor female.
Irene,
it whispered through the crack in the door. She could hear the smile in its voice.
Irene.
Her blood went cold. It was not a human voice.
What is it you want?
Kaol said, his own voice like steel.
Irene.
Her knees buckled so wildly she could barely stand. Every moment of training she'd done slithered right out of her head.
Get out!
Kaol snarled toward the door.
Before you regret it.
Irene.
It hissed, laughing a bit.
Irene.
Volg. One had indeed been hunting her that night, and had come for her again tonight. Clapping her free hand over her mouth, Irene sank onto the edge of the bed.
Don't you waste one heartbeat being afraid of a coward who hunts women in the darkness.
Kaol snapped at her. The thing on the other side of the door growled. The doorknob rattled.
Irene,
it repeated. Kaol only held her stare.
Your fear grants it power over you.
Irene.
He approached her, lowering his dagger and sword into his lap. Irene flinched, about to warn him not to lower his weapons. But Kaol stopped before her, took her face in his hands, his back wholly to the door now, even though she knew he monitored every sound and movement behind it.
I am not afraid,
he said softly, but not weakly.
And neither should you be.
Irene!
The thing snapped on the other side of the door, slamming into it. She cringed away, but Kaol held her face tightly, did not break her gaze.
We will face this,
he said.
Together.
Together. Live or die here together. Her breathing calmed, their faces so close his own breath brushed her mouth. Together. She hadn't thought to use such a word, to feel what it meant. She hadn't felt it since. Together. Irene nodded. Once. Twice. Kaol searched her eyes, his breath fanning her mouth. He lifted her hand, still clutched around the dagger, and adjusted her grip.
Angle it up, not straight in. You know where it is.
He put a hand on his chest, over his heart.
The other places?
Brain, through the eye socket, throat, slashing to unleash the life's blood. All the various arteries that could be struck to ensure a swift bleed out. Things she had learned to save, not
end. But this thing. Beheading works best, but try to get it down first. Long enough to sever the head.
He'd done this before, she realized. He'd killed these things, triumphed against them, had taken them on with no magic but his own indomitable will and courage.
And she
had crossed mountains and seas. She had done it on her own. Her hand stopped shaking. Her breathing evened out. Kaol's fingers squeezed around her own, the hilt's fine metal pushing into the palm of her hand.
Together,
he said one last time, and released her to pluck up his own weapons again. To face the door. There was only silence. He waited, calculating, sensing. A predator poised to strike.
Irene's dagger held steady as she rose to her feet behind him. A crash sounded through the foyer, followed by shouting. She started, but Kaol loosed a breath. One of shuddering relief. He recognized the sounds before she did. The shouts of guards. They spoke in Halha, cries through the bedroom door about their status. Safe? Hurt? Irene replied in her own shoddy use of the language that they were unharmed. The guard said the servant girl had seen the broken suite door and come running to fetch them. There was no one else in the suite. Chapter 28 Prince Kashin arrived swiftly, summoned by the guards at Irene's request, before she or Kaol even dared to remove the furniture barring the door. Any of the other royals required too much explaining, but Kashin. He understood the threat. Kaol knew the prince's voice well enough by that point. Irene knew it well herself. That as it filled the suite foyer, he gave her the nod to haul away the furniture blocking the door. Kaol was grateful, just for a heartbeat, that he remained in this chair. Relief might have buckled his legs. He hadn't been able to discern a viable path out of it. Not for her. In the chair, against a Volg minion, he was as good as carrion, though he'd calculated that a well-timed throw of his dagger and sword might save them. That had been his best option. Throwing. He hadn't cared, not really. Not about what it meant for him, but about how much time that throw might buy her. Someone had hunted her. Meant to kill her, terrorize and torment her. Perhaps worse, if it was indeed a Volg-infested agent of Morath, which it had sure as hell sounded like. He hadn't been able to make out the voice, male or female. Just one of them, though. Irene remained calm, as she opened the door at last to reveal a wild-eyed Kashin, panting heavily. The prince scanned her from head to toe, gave Kaol a brief glance, then returned his focus to the healer. What happened? Irene lingered behind Kaol's chair as she said with surprising calm, I was walking back here to make sure Lord Westfall took a tonic. Liar. Smooth, pretty liar. She'd likely been coming back to give him the second earful Kaol had been waiting for all evening. Irene came around the chair to stand beside him, close enough that the heat of her warmed his shoulder. And I was nearly here, when I sensed someone behind me. Irene then explained the rest, observing the room every now and then, as if whoever it had been would leap out of the shadows. And when Kashin asked if she suspected why someone might do her harm, Irene glanced at Kaol, a silent conversation passing between them. It had likely been to spook her from helping him, for whatever wicked purpose of Morath. But she'd only told the prince she didn't know. Kashin's face tightened with fury as he studied the cracked door to Kaol's bedroom. He said over his shoulder to the guards combing through the suite,
I want four of you outside the suite, another four at the end of the hall, a dozen of you in the garden, six more at the various hall crossroads that lead here.
Irene let out a breath of what might very well have been relief. Kashin heard it, putting a hand on the hilt of his sword as he said,
The castle is already being searched. I plan to join them.
Kaol knew it wasn't for Irene alone, knew that the prince had good reason to join the hunt, that there was likely still a white banner hanging from his windows. Gallant and dedicated. Perhaps how all princes should be. And perhaps a good friend for Dorian to have. If everything went in their favor. Kashin seemed to take a bracing breath. Then he asked Irene quietly,
Before I go, why don't I escort you back to the Torre? With an armed guard, of course.
There was enough concern and hope in the prince's eyes that Kaol made a point to busy himself by monitoring the guards still examining every inch of the rooms. Yet Irene wrapped her arms around herself and said,
I feel safer here.
Kaol tried not to blink at her, at the words. With him. She felt safer here with him.
He avoided the urge to remind her that he was in this chair. Caution's gaze now shifted to him, as if remembering he was there. And it was disappointment that now hardened his gaze. Disappointment and warning, as he met Kaol's stare. Kaol clamped down on his warning to Caution to stop giving him that look and go search the palace. He'd keep his hands to himself. He'd been unable to stop thinking about Nezrin's letter all day. When he wasn't mulling over all that Shen had shown him. What it had done to him to see what lay beneath that proud guard's sleeve. But the prince just bowed his head, a hand on his chest.
Send word if you need anything.
Irene barely managed a nod in Caution's direction. It was dismissive enough that Kaol almost felt bad for the man. The prince moved out with a lingering glance at Irene, some guards trailing him, the others remaining behind. Kaol watched through the garden doors as they settled into place just outside.
Nezrin's bedroom is empty,
he said when they were alone in his chamber at last. He waited for the question about why, but realized she hadn't so much as mentioned Nezrin when she'd fled in here. Hadn't tried to rouse her. She'd gone right to him. So it was no surprise when Irene just said,
I know it is.
Palace spies or gossip, he didn't care. Not as Irene said,
Can I stay in here? I'll sleep on the floor.
You can sleep in the bed. I doubt I'll get any rest tonight.
Even with the guards outside. He'd seen what one Volg could do against multiple men. He'd seen Aelin move, one assassin through a field of men, and cut them down in heartbeats. No, he would not be sleeping tonight.
You can't sit in that chair all night.
Kaol gave her a look that said otherwise. Irene swallowed, and excused herself to the bathing room. As she quickly washed up, he assessed the guards outside, the integrity of the bedroom lock. She emerged still in her dress, neckline wet, face wan again. She hesitated before the bed.
They changed the sheets,
Kaol said softly. She didn't look at him as she climbed in, each movement smaller than usual. Brittle. Terror still gripped her, though she'd done beautifully. He wasn't sure if he would have been able to move that chest of drawers, but pure terror had given her a dose of strength. He'd heard stories of mothers lifting entire wagons off their children crushed beneath. Irene slid beneath the covers, but made no move to nestle her head onto the pillow.
What is it like?
To kill someone? Kane's face flashed in his mind.
I'm new to it,
Kaol admitted. She angled her head.
I took my first life just after Yulmas last year.
Her brows narrowed.
But you...
I trained for it, had fought before, but never killed someone.
You were captain of the guard.
I told you, he said with a bitter smile, it was complicated.
Irene nestled down at last.
But you have done it since.
Yes, but not enough to grow used to it. Against the Volg, yes, but the humans they infest. Some are lost forever. Some are still there, beneath the demon. Figuring out who to kill, who can be spared. I still don't know where the bad choices lie. The dead do not speak.
Her head slid against the pillow.
I took an oath before my mother, when I was 7. Never to kill a human being. Some healings, she told me offering death could be a mercy, but that it was different from slaughter.
It is.
I think I might have tried to kill whoever it was tonight. I was that.
He waited for her to say frightened. Frightened with my only defender in a chair.
I was that decided against running. You told me you'd buy me time, but I can't do it. Not again.
His chest tightened.
I understand.
I'm glad I didn't do it, but whoever it is got away. Perhaps I should not be so relieved.
Caution may be lucky in his search.
I doubt it. They were gone before the guards arrived.
He fell quiet.
After a moment, he said,
I hope you never have to use that dagger, or any other, Irene. Even as a mercy.
The sorrow in her eyes was enough to knock the breath from him. Thank you, she said softly, for being willing to take that death upon yourself. No one had ever said such a thing, even Dorian.
But it had been expected.
Selena, Aelin, had been grateful when he'd killed Cain to save her. But she had expected him to one day make a kill.
Aelin had made more than he could count by that point, and his own lack of it had been embarrassing, as if such a thing were possible.
He had killed plenty since then, in Rifthold, with those rebels against the Vogue. But Irene, she made that number smaller. He hadn't looked at it that way. With pride. Relief.
I'm sorry Nesrin left,
Irene murmured into the dim light.
I hold you to no promises, and I will hold to none of my own.
I promised her an adventure,
Kaol admitted.
She deserved to go on one.
Irene was quiet enough that he turned from the garden doors. She had snuggled deep into his bed, her attention fixed wholly on him.
What about you? What do you deserve?
Nothing. I deserve nothing.
Irene studied him.
I don't agree at all,
she murmured,
eyelids drooping.
He monitored the exits again. After a few minutes, he said,
I was given enough and squandered it.
Kaol looked over at her, but Irene's face was softened with sleep, her breathing steady. He watched her for a long while. Irene was still sleeping when dawn broke. Kaol had dozed for a few minutes at a time, as much as he'd allow himself. But as the sun crept across the bedroom floor, he found himself washing his face, scrubbing the sleep from his eyes. Irene didn't stir as he moved out of the suite and into the hall. The guards were precisely where Caution had ordered them to remain. And they told him precisely where he needed to go when he met them each in the eye and asked for directions. And then he informed them that if Irene were harmed while he was gone, he'd shatter every bone in their bodies. Minutes later, he found the training courtyard Irene had mentioned yesterday. It was already full of guards, some of whom eyed him and some of whom ignored him fully, some whom he recognized from Shen's shift and gave him a nod. One of the guards he did not know approached him, older and grayer than the rest. Like Brullo, his former instructor and weapons master. Dead. Hanging from those gates. Kaol pushed away the image, replaced it with the healer still asleep in his bed. How she had looked when she'd declared to the prince, the world, that she felt safer there, with him. He replaced the pain that rippled through him at the sight of the exercising guards, the sight of this private training space, so similar to the one in which he'd spent so many hours of his life, with the image of Shen's artificial arm, the unwavering quiet strength he'd felt supporting him while he'd mounted his horse. No less a man without that arm. No less a guard.
Lord Westfall,
said the gray-haired guard, using his language.
What can I do for you at this hour?
The man seemed astute enough to know if there had been something related to the attack. This would not be the place to discuss it. No. The man knew Kaol had come here for a different reason, and read the tension in his body as not a source of alarm, but intrigue.
I trained for years with men from my continent,
Kaol said, lifting the sword and dagger he'd brought with him.
Learned as much as they know.
The older guard's brows flicked up. Kaol held the man's stare.
I would like to learn what you know.
The aging guard, Hashim, worked him until Kaol could barely breathe, even in the chair and out of it. Hashim, who was a rank below captain and oversaw the guard's training, found ways for Kaol to do their exercises, either with someone bracing his feet,
or modified versions from the chair. He had indeed worked with Shen a year ago. Many of the guards had. They'd banded together, assisting Shen in any way they could with the reorienting of his body, his way of fighting, during those long months of recovery. So not one of them stared or laughed. Not one of them whispered. They were all too busy, too tired to bother anyway. The sun rose over the courtyard, and still they worked. Still, Hashim showed him new ways to strike with a blade, how to disarm an opponent. A different way of thinking, of killing, of defending. A different language of death. They broke at breakfast, all of them near trembling with exhaustion. Even winded, Kaol could have kept going. Not for any reserve of strength, but because he wanted to. Irene was waiting when he returned to the suite and bathed. 6 hours they then spent lost in that darkness. At the end of it, the pain had wrecked him. Irene was shaking with exhaustion, but a precise sort of awareness had awoken within his feet, crept up past his ankles, as if the numbness were a receding tide. Irene returned to the Torre that night under heavy guard, and he fell into the deepest sleep of his life. Kaol was waiting for Hashim in the training ring before dawn. And the next dawn. And the next. Part 2. Mountains and Seas. Chapter 29. Storms waylaid Nezrin and Sartak on their way out of the northern Asimil Mountains. Upon awakening, the prince had taken one look at the bruised clouds and ordered Nezrin to secure everything she could on their rocky outcropping. Kadara shifted from clawed foot to clawed foot, rustling her wings as her golden eyes monitored the storm galloping in. That high up, the crack of thunder echoed off every rock and crevice. And as Nezrin and Sartak sat pressed against the stone wall beneath the overhang, winds lashing them, she could have sworn even the mountain beneath shuddered. But Kadara held fast against the storm, settling herself in front of them, a veritable wall of white and golden feathers. Still, the icy rain managed to find them, freezing Nezrin down to her bones even with the thick rook leathers and heavy wool blankets Sartak insisted she wrap around herself. Her teeth chattered violently enough to make her jaw hurt, and her hands were so numb and raw that she kept them tucked beneath her armpits, just to savor any scrap of warmth. Even before magic had vanished, Nezrin had never longed for magical gifts. And after magic had disappeared, after the decrees banning it and the terrible hunts for those who had once wielded it, Nezrin hadn't dared to even think about magic. She'd been content to practice her archery, to learn how to wield knives and swords, to master her body until it, too, was a weapon. Magic had failed, she'd told her father and sister whenever they asked. Good steel would not. Yet sitting on that cliff, whipped by the wind and rain until she couldn't remember what warmth felt like, Nezrin found herself wishing for a spark of flame in her veins, or at least for a certain firebringer to come swaggering around the corner of the cliff to warm them. But Aelin was far away, unaccounted for, if Hassar's report was to be believed, which Nezrin did. The true question was whether Aelin and her court's vanishing were due to some awful play by Morath, or some scheme of the queen herself. Having seen what Aelin was capable of in Rifthold, the plans she laid out and enacted without any of them knowing, Nezrin's money was on Aelin. The queen would show up when and where she wished, at precisely the moment she intended. Nezrin supposed that was why she liked the queen. There were plans so long in the making that for someone who let the world deem her unchecked and brash, Aelin showed a great deal of restraint in keeping it all hidden. And as that storm raged around Nezrin and Sartak, she wondered if Aelin Galathinius might yet have some card up her sleeve that even her court might not know about. She prayed Aelin did, for all their sakes. But magic had failed before, Nezrin reminded herself, as her teeth clacked against each other. and she'd do everything she could to find a way to fight Morath without it. It was hours before the storm at last lumbered off to terrorize other parts of the world. Sartak only easing to his feet when Kadara fanned her feathers, shaking off the rain, spraying them in the process, but Nezrin was in no position to complain when the Rook had taken the brunt of the storm's wrath for them. Of course, it also left the saddle damp, which in turn led to a fairly uncomfortable ride as they soared down the brisk, clean winds from the mountains, and into the sprawling grasslands below. With the delay, they were forced to camp for another night, this time in a copse of trees, again with not so much as an ember to warm them. Nezrin kept her mouth shut about it, the cold that lingered along her bones, the roots that dug into her back through the bedroll, the empty pit in her stomach that fruit and dried meat and day-old bread couldn't fill. Sartak, to his credit, gave her his blankets and asked if she wanted a change of his clothes. But she barely knew him, she realized. This man she'd flown off with, this prince with his Sulde and sharp-eyed Rook. He was little more than a stranger. Such things didn't usually bother her. Working for the city guard, she'd dealt with strangers every day, in various states of awfulness or panic. The pleasant encounters had been few and far between, particularly in the past 6 months, when darkness had crept over the city and hunted beneath it. But with Sartak? As Nezrin shivered all night long, she wondered if she'd perhaps been a tad hasty in coming here, possible alliance or no. Her limbs ached and eyes burned when the gray light of dawn trickled through the slim pines. Kadara was already stirring, eager to be off, and Nezrin and Sartak exchanged less than a half dozen sentences before they were airborne for the last leg of their journey. They'd been flying for 2 hours, the winds growing crisper the farther south they sailed, when Sartak said in her ear,
"That way."
He pointed due east.
"Fly half a day in that direction, and you'll reach the northern edges of the steppes, the heartland of the Dargon."
"Do you visit often?" A pause. He said over the wind,
"Kashan holds their loyalty, and Tumaloon."
The way he spoke his sister's name implied enough.
"But the Rukin and the Dargon were once one and the same. We chased down the Rooks atop our Muniki horses, tracked them deep into the Tavan Mountains."
He pointed to the southeast as Kadara shifted, aiming for the towering, jagged mountains that clawed at the sky. They were peppered with forests, some peaks capped in snow.
"And when we tamed the Rooks, some of the horse lords chose not to return down to the steppes."
"Which is why so many of your traditions remain the same," Nezrin observed, glancing down at the Sulde strapped to the saddle. The drop far, far below loomed, dried grasses swaying like a golden sea, carved by thin, twining rivers. She quickly looked ahead toward the mountains. Though she'd grown mostly accustomed to the idea of how very little stood between her and death atop this Rook, reminding herself of it did nothing to settle her stomach.
"Yes," Sartak said. "It is also why our riders often band with the Dargon in war. Our fighting techniques differ, but we mostly know how to work together."
"A cavalry below and aerial coverage above," Nezrin said, trying not to sound too interested. "Have you ever gone to war?" The prince was quiet for a minute. Then he said,
"Not on the scale of what is being unleashed in your land. Our father ensures that the territories within our empire are well aware that loyalty is rewarded, and resistance is answered with death."
Ice skittered down her spine. Sartak went on,
"So I have been dispatched twice now to remind certain restless territories of that cold truth."
A hot breath at her ear.
"Then there are the clans within the Rukin themselves, ancient rivalries that I have learned to navigate, and conflicts I have had to smooth over."
The hard way, he didn't add. He instead said,
"As a city guard, you must have dealt with such things."
She snorted at the thought. "I was mostly on patrol. Rarely promoted."
Considering your skill with a bow, I would have thought you ran the entire place.
Nezrin smiled.